I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. President Donald Trump launched a Twitter attack on four Democratic congresswomen, stating that they should go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came. The tweets made headlines, as only one of the women was born outside of the U.S. It sparked outrage, debate, and demands for Congress to call out the president for racist remarks. Today, we'll ask three women of color for their thoughts on those tweets and the message they send to minorities. Then, there's a definite housing shortage in this country. Two area realtors update us on home availability in the KC area and tell us how much house you can get for your money in this seller's market. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Go back to where you came from. That's what President Trump tweeted in remarks aimed at four Democratic congresswomen, all women of color. President Trump is standing by his racist remarks, but we wondered, what do people of color think when someone tells them to go back where they came from? What does that feel like coming as it does from the leader of the free world? That's our first segment this morning. With us to talk about it, Michelle Tyrene Johnson is back. She's KCUR's race, inclusion, and culture reporter. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Manaz Shabir is here. She's president of Shabir Advisors, a management consulting company. She's past president of the Heartland Muslim Council. She serves on numerous boards, including that of Truman Medical Centers and the Crescent Peace Society. Manaz, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too, Steve.
Also here is Kansas State Representative Susan Ruiz. She's a Democrat from Shawnee. Representative, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Well, let's begin with this. What did you make of the president's tweets? What did you make of the president standing by those tweets? Manaz?
Well, I was sharing I was out of the country when I was reading these, and I felt that it was a dark day for America.
Why?
I felt that here's a president who's saying these things to American citizens, and it's like a ripple effect. I'm so glad, like right now, school is not in session, because I don't know what that would have done to children in the school classrooms, because that's where some of these ugly things can come up. And I just felt that here's the leader of the free world, and he's saying these things. And it's like, how can this be? How did we go this far that this kind of a person can get away with something like this?
Representative Ruiz, as Manaz Shabir was talking about school kids, you were nodding your head. Why?
You know, when the president was elected, and there was a lot of white supremacists who were almost crowning him as their king, practically. There was a lot of that happened to kids in school. A lot of kids of color were hearing those things that, you know, go back to the country where you came from. And, you know, I remember as a kid in kindergarten, elementary school, you know, and hearing the same thing and just thinking to myself, what does that mean? Go home, I'm in school. Why would I go back home? You know, so as a kid, you kind of take that more concretely. And as you get older, you understand what that really means. Is, yeah, you're not welcome. You're not one of us. You're not, you know, you shouldn't be here.
Michelle Tyrene Johnson, you cover race for KCUR, and I'm wondering what you've been picking up this week in the wake of these tweets from the president this last weekend.
You know, I think it's interesting how people, excuse me, there's even a discussion on why this is problematic. That there's even a discussion, well, it's not racist, or is it racist, or explain to me why it's racist. And in part, it's racist because it's something that's only thrown to people who look anything other than white. I mean, nobody's ever tossed that to the president himself. His immigration lineage isn't any different than the people that he's talking about. He's second generation on his mother's side. I think I'm getting this right. Third generation on his father's side. And yet no one in an argument tosses out to him, well, if you don't like how America's run, how the last president did things, why don't you go back to where you came from? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reason why those of us who are of color who've heard that directed at us in a discussion, a conversation, a fight, know it's about race, because I don't have a white friend, a white colleague who's ever had that thrown at them.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, again, a basic question here, Manaz, how this makes you feel. What's your personal reaction to what the president has said?
It made me terribly sad. Mm-hmm. It brought back growing up, things that were said to me or my children, and now I have grandchildren, and so I fear for their future as they grow up.
You fear for their future? Why?
It's unfortunately, it's not getting better. You know, when I give my talks and people say, well, you know, this is what happened, like when 9/11 happened. And then my younger children got older and they got worse during the election cycle. Every year it gets worse and worse. And now we have a leader of this country who's like propagating it. He's wanting to egg on hatred. And so I'm just thinking, what will happen to my grandson who's going to be starting kindergarten in a year or so? And I'm thinking, you know, what is it going to be like for him? So it makes me afraid that we are, what seeds are we sowing now that's going to perk up down the road?
You know, you say it's not getting better, but it's supposed to be getting better. I mean, that's a lot of folks might hear that, maybe white folks, and wonder, what are you talking about? It's supposed to be getting better.
Right. And, you know, for white folks, let's use that term for a second. When we say something is not appropriate to say and they're not aware of it, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize it. And then they'll change their conversation. They realize what they said was inappropriate. This guy, he doesn't want to do that. He just wants to keep on. And so I think there's, you know, I don't want to put like a blanket out there, but, you know, we are changing. Our country is changing. By the year 2040, there's not going to be a majority race. And for some people, that's scary. And for some of us, it's like, okay, great. You know, we're all going to be on the equal footing. And
is that the genesis for a lot of this notion that you just threw out, that by 2040, there will not be a majority portion in this country?
Think about it. Think about all these little tactics that are being put out there, you know, stopping people to come in through the border, putting a ban on the Muslim ban, this ICE raids. I mean, I have American citizen friends who are walking around now with their passport because they're not sure what if they're going to be picked up innocently, but they're carrying their passport with them now.
Just in case.
Yeah, so We are in this place where I think these tactics that are being used are ways of slowing down the 2040. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And how do we embrace that? Yeah. How do we, you know, like the Interfaith Council has created a vision that the Kansas City area is the area to welcome people of all faiths. And what I'm finding is that every time there's a lot of good things that are happening in our greater Kansas City area, but then something like this happens and it like takes us back.
Representative Ruiz, how does his remarks, the president's remarks, make you feel?
Initially, it angered me because, you know, he's not stopping this kind of rhetoric. And it almost feels like the more focus he's being paid to because of, you know, misdealings, he's misogynistic, you know, and he's been accused of so many things. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, he's trying to draw attention away from that by looking at the kind of things that really get people riled up, you mm-hmm. know. So let's try to do raids every Sunday, mm-hmm. you know, and it keeps everyone who might be picked up at a raid or, you know, like anybody who even is a citizen, but, you know, you might be pretty dark brown and they might pick you up too. And so you are forced to carry a passport or your citizenship papers, whatever it might be. And so that anger then brought to my mind all the memories of hearing that, mm-hmm. you know, hearing that as a child. In kindergarten and hearing that kind of stuff.
And here we are.
As an adult, just the first time we elected President Obama, I went to Costco. I had a T-shirt on that it was an Obama T-shirt. I was happy that we had finally, you know, we'd elected a good man to be our president. And a guy came up to me at Costco and started fighting with me verbally, and it could have escalated to a physical, but, you know, I stepped away from it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, as I was walking away, it was like, go back to the country you came from. You know, so that gets thrown out there all the time.
There's that line again.
Yeah.
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 Michelle, I'm wondering what your personal reaction was to this.
But I have to keep it clean.
I was going to say, we got to be able to stay on the radio here, Michelle.
You know, it's just aggravating to see the same things happen over and over again, only it gets escalated or taken by our president. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are just, as I said the other day, there are just certain things I don't want to see come out of an elected official's mouth. It's bad enough if I got to see it in social media, as you said, in some stupid fight out in public, but I should not ever have to hear it from my president. And for me, you know, what I think of is, if he would say this, okay, then where are you going to go next?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can think of a couple of where he's going to go next. I'd like to think he wouldn't go to that. But after this, I don't know what lines won't be crossed. And, you know, I know a lot of people think this is a distraction. It's not a distraction. It's the point. If every American can't feel as if their being an American isn't being constantly questioned and challenged, then how can we go forward on anything?
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to KCUR's Up to Date. We're talking about reaction to President Trump's tweets this weekend with three women of color. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our number here. You can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Representative Ruiz, I'm wondering, you represent Shawnee, northwestern Johnson County. What kind of response have you had from constituents? What's been the response?
And I represent Shawnee, Lenexa, Overland Park.
It's okay.
District 23.
So it goes a little broader than Shawnee.
A little broader than Shawnee.
Yeah.
You know, nothing has come to me through via email, but people have stopped me as I've been to other events.
And they say what?
They're angry. They're mm-hmm. also angry. And they want the occupant of the White House to stop stop the things that are coming out of his mouth.
Right.
Because it's just trying to pit us all against each other. And that's not what we are about. You know, all of a sudden we've forgotten that we are an immigrant country. And, you know, so if everyone would go back to that, and some of it, my father came from Mexico, so I'm first generation.
Mm-hmm.
And people forget that. They forget when they don't look at their own history. And if people would look at their own history and appreciate where, you know, our families came from and understand the struggles that they went through to come to the United States and then build a life here.
Right.
I just wish people would do that.
And maybe one of the frustrations here, Manoj Shabir, is this idea that Representative Ruiz was just saying people would wish that this president would stop this behavior. But what can they do about it? I mean, nothing that's been said to him up to this point has resulted in changed behavior. And there's a frustration inherent in that, I think.
Well, I think it's electing other leaders. I mean, that's basically what we need to do so we can get him out of office and support candidates, you know, all the way down the ticket. So we have a representation of what the community is like, because we can go from a verbal get out of my country to like what happened in Olathe, the shooting, when that man said to the two men who were at the tavern, get out of my country, and then he shot them
mm-hmm.
and killed one of them. And so these are the kind of things that, you know, we need to, like for me, for example, and I would welcome everyone to do this, of people that are not like the other, is to share yourself. You know, I go and I start talking to people as I'm pulling the corn at the grocery store and say, oh, this corn looks pretty good, mm-hmm. you know, and that you start breaking down the barriers mm-hmm. and say, okay, that's not what I heard by that person
right.
on the news. This person's actually speaking to me in a nice way, and I can relate to her because we both like to eat corn, for example. And I think I think once people realize that we're more alike than we are different, I think some of this can dissipate. But the thing is that he keeps on saying it every time. And then the other, that party doesn't say it's wrong, which is also
Republican a, party.
Yeah, that, yeah. Yes.
Let's go to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. We're reacting to President Trump's tweets this weekend, racist tweets, 816-235-2888. Scott from Kansas City, Kansas, good morning.
Good morning. My concern here is if Trump is tweeting these things out for the whole world to see, what is he and his people saying behind closed doors?
Huh. Okay. And you wonder sometimes, Representative Ruiz.
I do. That, exactly. Thank you for saying that, because it is. You know, if he's okay with saying these kinds of things in public, oh, my God, what is he doing behind closed doors? And I know the people around him know what's going on. And it feels like to me that the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell, they all know what's going on. And they're choosing not to say anything. So if you don't say something, then you condone it.
Well, let's get some more reactions here. We had a KCUR reporter out yesterday. Here's Renee Martinez, who spoke with KCUR yesterday.
I agree with the sentiment that President Trump is bringing to the table. I do not agree with the way that he talks to women and how derogatory he is. He's very, he lacks decorum. Is kind of my thing. I think if he could be a little bit more eloquent, he had maybe a little bit more of the charisma that President Obama had, I think things would come across a little bit better to people.
You know, we've heard this before, that supporters of the president often, you know, agree with his policies, but not with how he gets things done. But the president is literally saying, Michelle, if you don't like how the country is now, you can leave. Is there anything about that position that you can agree with?
I mean, if he really thinks that, he could have thought about that himself. I mean, instead of running for president, I mean, and I say that not being flip, but he ran an election based on what he did not like about America and the direction it was going in. Mm-hmm. He did not take the position himself. I don't like things. I'm leaving. So, I mean, I just think if you're going to spout the same words that people spout when they're racist, then you can't be surprised when people think that you have the same mentality.
Is there any doubt in your mind, Representative Ruiz, that his comments were racist?
No.
The media has been kicking this idea around, but you know.
There's no doubt. And the three of us would, I'm sure, would agree. Any, you know, even as a child, and I went home to tell my father that this was said to me, he told me what that was.
And he said what?
And he said that there are some people that will not accept you because of the color of your skin.
That's called racism.
It's called racism.
What's interesting to me as a black woman is how many times I've either seen it directed towards someone else or in a fight directed towards me. I'm like, I'm African American. Did you think through how I got here? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not an immigrant. I mean, let's be real clear on that. Unless you're an actual African person who is immigrated here, I'm a descendant of slaves. So when you say to me, go back to where you came from, I mean, I didn't take a cruise ship and overstay. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's why it's, whenever I hear that, it's just the logical inconsistency of it along with the mentality is what gets me.
It's also uneducated kind of a conversation, because it's okay to not agree with someone. It's okay. Dissent is fine. You can have you and I may not agree on an issue, but why go down to name calling?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what are we teaching our kids? You know, that kind of thing. So our country is based on, you know, discussions and disagreements, and that's how we move to where we are today. So saying that you have to agree with everything I say, which we don't, what would half the country do, more than half the country do, you know?
Back to some phone calls. Elvis from Fort Scott, Kansas. Elvis, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Yes, my comment is, I am a veteran of the United States Army, and I serve proudly. I serve so everyone of color, as even President Trump and all Americans, have a seat at the table. It grieves me very much to hear him say something like that, because my daughter is a mixed race, interracial, you know, person. So I'm very concerned about her when I hear stuff from come out of the president's mouth.
Right. Elvis, so thank you for calling. Thanks for your service. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Stan from Kansas City, Missouri. Stan, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, Steve. Hey, thanks for this conversation. And I guess a simple comment is dissent is patriotic. And we seem to want to forget that. And this is a reoccurring theme that even came out of the Bush administration. You're either with us or against it. And it has to be this, the common message of the Republican Party is that if you don't like it, too bad. And we really have to get out in this next election and vote for our values and vote Democratic and let's take the Senate and the White House.
Stan, do you think people are going to get out, or is there a sense that so many folks have become numb to the president's ongoing comments that maybe it won't result in the turnout that some Democrats would hope for?
Well, I would say I think it was Representative Ruiz who said starting conversations in the, like, unlikely places to build those relationships. I think that's really a key. A lot of people fail to talk about politics and religion, whether they're religious or not, because of they're afraid of offending someone. Well, it's been proven that there's so many people who are questioning those things themselves. And if they don't hear alternative views, they will go with the same misconception.
Right. Stan, I appreciate those comments. And Representative Ruiz, what about my question? Is this going to result in people getting active and going to the polls, or is there a numbness that has set in that has caused maybe the opposite reaction?
No. We saw a surge in the polls in 2018, at least, you know, in Kansas and Johnson County, and you know, because that's what I'm most familiar with.
Right.
There's a surge. I'm hearing it every day. If there are people that are going to go out and vote, they see that there's a momentum going on right now, and there are more people, more women in particular, who are running for office, and you know that's just wonderful, because you can look at research that when more women are in elected officials, the community is better.
Mm-hmm. Manaz, what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who's now running for Johnson County Commissioner, and she's Muslim and she wears a headscarf, and I'm very proud of her taking that stand.
Because you haven't seen that often.
No, yeah. No, not at all. And I mean, she's had several comments that are made on her Facebook page, and you know, one of the things I said to one of the folks, I said, teach your children well. And I don't think, you know, I think sometimes people forget, you know, they can say they spew out hate and they don't realize what they're teaching their children.
Steve from Lee's Summit. Steve, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, I don't like what Trump said, one of your guests said there that the Caucasian population is going to be a minority and people are afraid of that. Well, number one, I'd like to know what the data is, that the empirical data, the accurate data that is shows that. And thousands of people I know are reactionary to something that's happened to them, and you know, they're not afraid because they're going to be a minority. They're reacting to something that happened to them. And in conclusion, I'd like to say I'm just going to say I just about got ripped off numerous times by illegal immigrants, and also I about got killed by one of them tried to rob me and tried to actually run me down with a car after I caught him trying to rob me. But anyway, I want to say about these women that are up there. Have you or have I have never heard them say, "Only in America, God bless America"? only could we achieve this in America. I've never heard one of them say that one time, so there's my comment.
Okay, Steve, thanks. You've thrown out a lot of stuff here. Banaz Shabir, do you want to respond? There's several things here he threw out. One thing was the demographic question about are whites going to be part of a minority population at some point
right.
down the road?
I mean, he can look online. He can look at Pew Research. He can look at census data. Just Google it, and he'll find it. And what I said was there's not going to be a majority race, mm-hmm. is what I said. So we're all going to be minorities. There won't be one particular majority race.
He's been ripped off by people of color. Address that.
Right. Well, just like this, the person who killed at the tavern, he was a white citizen, and then he did that. I mean, I think those kind of comments don't help the conversation. I mean, those kind of comments are actually racist. So I think he should start looking and saying, okay, he probably has an immigrant doctor. He probably has an immigrant lawyer. He probably has people that are U.S. citizens that came through channels and are now taking care of him or his family in one way or another. And so why don't we talk about those things, you know, about how the immigrant population has helped our country.
Mm-hmm.
Also, being patriotic, when I give a lot of my talks, I wear my flag. Oh, I wear a headscarf, and I have a flag that's a headscarf. I have four Eagle sons, Eagle Scout sons. My brother was an Eagle Scout. So, you know, we don't have to tout our Americanism. It's a given. I mean, for me to even like kind of justify it, I think you're going down a hole that is unnecessary, and questioning any of those congresswomen about their loyalty is also unfounded.
Michelle?
Yeah, as I said to a friend in a conversation we were having earlier today, the subtext seems to be for some folks is that people of color are to be seen and grateful, but not heard. And that, I mean, I took that as sort of what he was saying. How dare they not lead every statement they make with, look at how good America's been to me. I mean, they could do that, but then so should every white person. I mean, if we're all American, we're all grateful. Why are only a subset supposed to lead with that?
Let me get one more comment from Lisa from Kansas City, Missouri on President Trump's tweets. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning. Yesterday, I heard a broadcast on NPR. And there was a Professor Lopez, I didn't catch his first name, who was a guest, and he said, this really resonated with me. He said, I don't think Trump wants a white America. I think he is creating this racial theater to keep everybody that's not wealthy, that's not a huge corporation, keep us all divided. He wants a divided America so we won't be paying attention to the rich getting richer,
right,
the poor getting poorer.
Lisa, thank you. Representative Ruiz, does that make sense?
Somewhat. I don't, you know, I haven't thought really along those lines other than the fact that there is a purpose to his behavior with trying to divide America. And, you know, it's like, pay attention to this over here, but don't pay attention to all this other stuff that's going on.
I think is what Lisa was saying. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. It was a good one. I want to thank Representative Susan Ruiz, a Democrat from Shawnee, Manaz Shabir, president of Shabir Advisors, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, KCUR's race, inclusion, and culture reporter. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having the conversation.
We're going to talk about Kansas City real estate, the hot market, and what first-time home buyers, how they can grapple with it in just a moment. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, it remains a seller's market in Kansas City, but what are home buyers looking for these days in a house, and what's it going to cost them? The price of homes has profound implications for young people starting out in their careers and what type of house they can get into. With us to give us a rundown of Kansas City's real estate scene is Nestor Zuluaga. He's with the Zuluaga Group in Lenexa. Nestor, welcome. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for the invitation.
Steve Moyer is president of the Kansas City Regional Association of Realtors. Steve, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Is it still a seller's market out there, Steve?
Very much so. The number of homes available in the market are going down. They're not going up. So it remains a very strong seller's market.
And Nestor, it's been that way for a while, right?
This is true. We have seen the market shift. When we look at back when the housing crisis started, we had about 11 to 12 months of inventory, which means that was a buyer's market. Balanced market, it's more about 5 to 6 months. And the number is basically calculated based on the number of sales divided by the number of homes available, and we come up with those figures. Today, we are looking at 2.1 in Johnson County. Wyandotte County is like 1.8 months
of inventory. Which is a very low inventory.
Very, very, very low.
So people are putting houses on the market, and they're sometimes being sold even before they're officially on the market, right?
Oh, multiple offers.
Mm-hmm.
So that creates a challenge market for first-time buyers. Typically, we used to be able to negotiate closing costs, maybe some even repairs. But in today's market, we're seeing offers come in. We're over asking price, buying it as is. They just want a house.
Well, the problem with folks who hear that and might want to sell a house, Steve, is then they have to turn around and go out and buy one themselves. So can anybody make money in this thing?
Well, they can. You must get your property ready. So you need to pay attention to the market and understand what the current buyers are looking for and your competition. But that's also that fear of not being able to find a property is paralyzing some people. So they're not putting their house on the market. They're not convinced they're going to be able to find a house. So they do nothing. So that's one of the factors leading to the low inventory position.
Now, help me understand that, because just recently I've had some friends downsize, sell their homes. They've had to stage their homes and make everything look appropriate. If it's such a hot market to sell a house, why do people have to go through such elaborate steps to make it appear their home really looks like a hotel room instead of a lived-in home?
The competitive nature of the market. If you see a lot of very nicely finished homes, that's your expectation. Buyers also, when they look at a need to improve a home, assign a much higher price tag to that. For first-time buyers, if you've struggled to save up for the down payment and the closing costs, you want to finance those home improvements into the house. You don't want to buy a house and then have to be out of pocket to do the home improvements.
Yeah. You know, Nestor, this idea that you just mentioned that some folks are paying above listing price, is that a good idea? Is that ever a good idea?
Well, I would say it's a good idea if it means that you can own a home within a reasonable range of what you're paying. In other words, and I think it's something we're seeing quite a bit. Your realtor has to be very familiar with the market, with the trends, with what's going on in the neighborhoods. Because if we take the position, or the buyer takes the position, that they're just going to stick to offering asking price or within that range, they're not going to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're seeing folks, in my approach, for example, is let the buyers see that happen a little bit, because sometimes it's hard to think, oh, we have to offer 10 or even 15,000 over. They're not going to do that on their first offer. So once they see that their offer has been rejected several times, they'll get to understand what the market is doing. And when they see the sale data that, yeah, that home sold for $10,000 or $15,000 more than the asking price, they understand what the market is doing.
Well, but that requires that the buyers not fall in love with the house. And that's this phenomenon. You know, people go out looking for a house, they latch onto something and they don't want to let go. And your advice might be what to people?
Well,
like that?
The advice would be is that we need to keep our financial goals very clear over our emotional goals. We need to look at the numbers. We need to make sure we can afford that house. We need to make sure that we as a prospective buyer, I always take this approach that we are working together with the buyer, that we have the best possible offer, that we have them in the best possible position to have their offer accepted. And that means maybe not asking for closing costs or putting more money down, saving up a little more so they can be in a stronger position.
How much money, what percent of a home's value do you have to have in your back pocket to go out and buy one these days?
Well, I mean, depending on the area, you can even get it with zero down. And we're talking rural areas. But when we look at the metro area, you can get it with as little as 3%. But what happens then is that seller is going to look at that offer when they see that you're putting only 3% down. Even if you're offering asking price or over asking price, and they see one that is under with more down payment, they may consider that offer more favorably.
What's the hottest type of house, Steve, that's selling right now?
Oh, it varies by area. Certainly in Kansas City, we're a two-story community, but on your stage in life, it could be a story and a half. So it really varies based on your lifestyle needs.
Are there homes like in the $300,000 range that seem to be hotter than maybe a $400,000 or $500,000 home?
Probably. In our market, when you get closer to the $600,000 range, that's getting into the upper bracket, and you'll see a little slower movement in that area.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Chris from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hey, Steve, good morning. I was wondering what steps agents are taking to kind of stem the tide of gentrifications in lower income areas. We bought east of Truce because it was really the only place we could afford. We got a really good deal. However, now there are houses that are being listed in that area that were bought by investors that are listed for like $250,000, which seems pretty out of the range of people living in that area.
Gentrification, Nestor, what do you think's going on out there? Chris's question is, what can realtors do to stop it?
Well, that is a challenge. We're seeing a lot of national and even regional players come into our market, and without maybe as much of the local market knowledge, just sink money into it.
I mean, people coming out and buying homes here just to make an investment.
Yes. And so that creates a challenge because maybe they don't know all the factors of the community, the true value of the home. You can't just sink, $100,000 in a remodeling project and expect to get $200,000. So the challenge that the caller is saying, it's real. And I think the answer to that is we need to work close with our buyers and sellers to advise them on how to, where to invest. You got to look for the right components to create that stability in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a lot of vacant lots, when there's a lot of empty homes, we have to factor that in the decision or the strategy on whether or not to submit an offer on that house.
Steve, how much responsibility do realtors have to deal with gentrification?
Well, as a realtor association, we support legislators and legislation that are helping home ownership. We have a political action committee, and historically, our contributions are divided 50-50. So we don't pick a party. We pick a policy that is helping home ownership. So we take a very neutral stance, and I think we work with legislators, and we do everything we can to make sure the right people are in place to make those decisions that will ultimately help each and every community.
Yeah, Nestor, what are you seeing when it comes to rehabbing homes in Independence? What's been happening in that neighborhood, that city?
Well, the Independence area, I think, is a thriving city. There's a lot of things that are working correctly. The school district has invested quite a bit in their programs. And I'm actually seeing a lot of my clients sort of gravitate towards that city. And so one of the attractive points from their perspective is that it's you can still find very affordable homes.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some partnerships, I would say, with the City of Independence, with some not-for-profits in remodeling homes and providing some incentives to that future home buyer, such as tax abatement or tax rebates,
mm-hmm.
which I think really encourages investment and also it encourages investments from that rehabber or that not-for-profit. And then it gives it a really attractive proposition to that new home buyer.
Steve, we've heard from school officials that Black families are moving out of the city and into the suburbs, and that urban parts of Kansas City are seeing more and more Latinos moving in. Are you seeing that borne out in the work that you're seeing around town from real estate agents?
Maybe Nestor could speak to that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the change in demographics, but I will speak to Independence a little bit. I want to be complimentary to the Habitat for Humanity folks. They recently moved into the Nelson School, which has a long, rich history in and of itself. And they do far more than just rehab a house. They have a wonderful education program that I think helps people prepare for home ownership. So the City of Independence is benefiting greatly from that.
Nestor, what about Black families moving into the suburbs, more Latinos moving into the city? What are you seeing in terms of that trend?
You know, I think the answer is simple. I mean, I think they all want what we want, which is we want safe communities. We want good schools. We want safe environments, easy access to, you know, a supermarket and all that. So we're seeing those components play out. You know, for example, one of the fastest growing areas for the Latino community is Olathe. You know, most people thought, well, it would be Wyandotte County, but it's not. You know, Olathe is offering a balance of housing and work environments that I think is very attractive to the Latino community.
You know, the Star just had a story about Strawberry Hill in Kansas City, Kansas, being a place where an explosion of prices and development might occur. Are you seeing much activity there?
Strawberry Hill is a very unique little area. We're seeing a lot of younger families or even young folks that are trying to kind of create an environment of work and living in that community. So you see small cafes, you see, you know, like environments to try to develop their business ideas, very affordable compared to Kansas City, Missouri, when you're just across the bridge there. Mm-hmm. So, it's an exploding little community. For sure.
We have a tweet here from Charles as we talk about the Kansas City real estate market. Steve, what about homes under $200,000? Can you get them out there?
You can. Generally, homes in those price ranges are going to need some renovation. It's just very difficult for builders to build in that price range over the past.
Why is that?
Well, for one thing,
here that same argument applies to low-income housing that the community is dealing with at such a big level.
The cost of lumber has gone up 60-70% over the past few years. Mm-hmm. To get framers to come in and actually do the work, there's a very short supply, so that cost has gone up. So our costs to build have gone up tremendously.
So if you're going to build a house, the value, the profits in building a more expensive house, you're saying?
Well, builders don't make as much money as people think. They may make 5% profit on the house. So if something goes wrong in the process of building, their margin drops considerably. So it's hard for a builder to be incented to build in the lower price ranges. Certainly, there are people that are doing it. As you get outside of the metro area, you can find more affordable housing.
If you're going to buy a house under $200,000, Nestor, where would you go?
Well, I would suggest that folks buy close to where they work and where the kids go to school. So if you're looking, for example, Johnson County, Kansas, it's a challenge. There's very few homes under 200,000. And if you do find them, you're going to have to give up a lot of things. You're going to have to give up maybe the basement, maybe the second bathroom you wanted, or you know, that extra bedroom you needed. Mm-hmm. So you can still find some homes. The number of homes, I think I was looking it up this morning, there's about 66 homes under, you know, 200,000 in Johnson County, which is a very low number. Mm. You know, we used to be able to buy brand new homes in the 150s, 160s, 170s in Johnson County. I mean, and that wasn't that long ago. It was maybe 10, 14 years ago.
But those days have passed.
Yeah, but as Steve mentioned, the cost of construction, the shortage of skilled labor has really contributed dramatically to the cost of new homes. For example, we have about half the builders and about half the workforce, skilled labor, that we had back in 06. So, and then on top of that, we have the cost of materials being up 66%. The numbers just don't work. So builders are only able to build in the upper brackets because that's where they can make their profit. And as Steve mentioned, it's not a huge profit, but at least be able to stay in business. Hmm. And I think the answer to be able to build affordable homes, it's a comprehensive answer that involves, I would say, the federal government, the state, and local communities to look at the needs of their population and create incentives to be able to build homes.
But no question, low-income housing is way behind where it needs to be.
Oh, without a doubt, yes.
But keep in mind, the average price of a home in Kansas City is $215,000. So we tend to focus on more affluent neighborhoods, but if the average price is $215,000, that means there's a lot of properties out there for under $200,000.
And people might wonder, where are they? And you're saying they're, what, all over in some way?
They're all over. They're under 200,000 in Johnson County, you know, older areas in Overland Park and Olathe. You go into cities like we mentioned, Independence, Raymore. There are certainly lots of communities with affordable housing. We tend to focus on some of the more popular affluent areas and think about what it costs to live.
Can you get a three-bedroom house, a house with some size to it for that price point?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, what about this reassessment mess that Jackson County residents are dealing with right now? Is that affecting your work as you go about doing what you do? I mean, could you see it affecting your work in the future?
Well, it's kind of a serious problem if you just received a bill for taxes and it went up dramatically. So, you know, we recommend that you work with an appraiser to make sure that is the actual assessment of the property. Certainly, we're happy to call us if you think it's now gotten outside of your pricing. But in many cases, I think it was just it wasn't assessed accurately for a period of time, and now it's assessed accurately. So that's a whole political discussion of how that should have been done. But I get it. If you've been paying $1,000 in taxes and now it's $4,000, that changes your affordability.
You know, the other thing I've wondered about, Nestor, is there's been so much attention paid to these abandoned houses in Kansas City, Wyandotte County, teardowns, but houses that might need to be torn down. Are these homes beyond repair? Is there anything worth salvaging there that might help a family that doesn't have a huge income?
Steve, the answer is yes, but I don't think it's a project that they can tackle on their own. There's several organizations that work in the community. There's one in Wyandotte County, Community Housing in Wyandotte County. There's one that works in the Metro, Builders Development Corporation. And these organizations take on these homes that may require substantial money to get them to a livable state.
Right.
And the typical first-time buyer doesn't have that kind of money, doesn't have those connections with the city and local government to get things done. In Wyandotte County, for example, there is the land bank where organizations, even private citizens, can buy lots, pay the taxes, and then you know build a home. But it requires financing. It requires construction loan. Rehabbing. Some of these homes have a lot of issues. They have lead-based paint issues, asbestos. So from my perspective, when I'm helping a buyer, I make sure that they understand all these components because it's not sweet equity that is just laying there. There's a lot of work before this house can be ready to go.
Steve, I got 10 seconds. Where can people go to get smarter before they go out and try to buy a house?
Start with a realtor conversation, not on one of the websites falling in love with a home. Talk to a realtor who will help you understand the process.
That's Nestor Zuluaga with the Zuluaga Group in Lenexa. Steve Moyers, president of the Kansas City Regional Association of Realtors. Thank you both very much.
Covered
a lot of ground.
Thank you.
Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Emily Aiken. I'm Steve Kraske. I'll see you tomorrow here on Up to Date.